Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Hey, listen, I did something a couple months back that really seemed to impact the audience. After years of talking about trying some of the different the methodologies and modalities out there that we've talked to guests on our show for years, I finally took the plunge, and we shared a whole episode on my journey. I did an ayahuasca journey,
mm-hmm.
And it, still very profound to this day. I mean, it's just I think about it every day. Think okay. about different aspects of it. I you know, at the time it said I don't know if I'm going to need to do one again because it was so profound. And now here we are a couple months later, and I could see totally wanting to tap back into that again, because it's not that you forget. But you do feel distanced by it. And it's not like an addictive, I need to get back to that feeling. It was just that I was so impressed with the download of information and everything that took place. And we had GK on the show who walked us through. She was my facilitator on the journey, mm-hmm. and walked us through, and we had a great conversation. But I was left with more questions. And I figured, you know, I'd like to get some answers from another source. And that's what we're going to do today. Our guest is Dr. Carl Kalaman, who holds a PhD in physical biology and has served as an expert on chemical carcinogens for the World Health Organization. He began his studies on the Mayan calendar in 1979 and now lectures throughout the world. He is also author of The Purposeful Universe, Solving the Greatest Mystery of Our Time, the Mayan Calendar, and The Mayan Calendar and the Transformation of Consciousness. He lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The new book that's out that we're going to be discussing is Quantum Science of Psychedelics, The Pineal Gland, Multidimensional Reality, and Mayan Cosmology. Thank you very much, and we appreciate you joining us, Dr. Kalaman.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dave. I'm looking forward to this, and especially good to have talked to somebody who has a personal experience of these kind of things.
Well, you know, a lot of people, when you bring up the term psychedelics, they automatically start thinking 60s hippies and just getting high, not that there's anything really transformative about it. I'd like a little bit of your concept in understanding psychedelics, as it were, and do you wish there was a better term for that that didn't have that same kind of hippie connotation to it nowadays?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, there's been all these suggestions. You know, some people talk about entheogens, and then some others would talk about plant medicines, and it's very tricky with this, because as you're saying the word psychedelics, it brings up completely different thoughts about what it's about compared to what I associate with it, because I wasn't part of that 60s movement, you might say. And so some people will simply avoid the whole thing just because of the term and because of how it was perceived in those days. And sometimes I think people were a little bit crazy in those days. And now it's come to have a completely different meaning. And there's coming all these scientific studies from very reputable places where showing that this is a very powerful therapeutic tool. Who knows? I mean, I could have used another term, maybe, if my publisher would have accepted that in the title of the book, but then people might not even have understood what it was about. You know, if you talk about plant medicine, well, there's right. millions of different plant medicines, and what I'm addressing is really that creates a kind of transference to another state of consciousness.
Right. And that's what I said. I'm not putting down. I mean, obviously, the book sells it. When you say these words, people get an understanding for it. But I think there's such a stigma attached to it that people yeah. are robbing themselves of enlightenment by just assuming you're talking about LSD or some other kind of drug that is not really necessarily. I'm trying to find the right term here. It's not something that is mind expanding, but mind altering. And maybe you could explain that to our listeners with psychedelics and ayahuasca, other plant medicines. What is the difference between mind altering and mind opening? Or are they interchangeable terms that are just used depending on who's doing the conversation?
I think those are alternate terms. And I wouldn't be able to give good definitions that would discern between the two. Mind opening, but what I'm talking about is really mind disengaging. And that, of course, implies a particular definition of mind as the kind of structured geometric mind that we live with in our default state, so to speak. And that particular mind is being disengaged by the use of, temporarily, I should say, by the use of psychedelics. And you might say it opens a mind. Yeah, sure, it does. If that structured mind is disengaged, it does mean that the mind is open to the cosmos, I would say, to much broader influences than it is in its normal default state.
See, well, that's, I guess, where so many people have written to me after my journey, you know, and I don't know how to answer these questions. When you talk about this consciousness and the structured mind, there doesn't really seem to be a way replicable that I'm aware of to show people what that actually means. When people listen, they said, you know, your story was great. I'm glad that it impacted you, but Dave, you were just high. Your brain, your brain was creating this illusion and you weren't. And I'm like, man, if I'm high, I had truly religious experiences. I had some life altering moments, things, knowledge that was given to me that I had not had before. It was truly enlightening at risk of overusing that word. It was something different. I've been high. I've smoked weed in the past. And, you know, I got to be honest with you, that's about the extent of it. I fear of any other drug and what the long-term effects have always kept me away from it. But I've been high and I've had those moments and I've been drunk and I've had those moments and I've been sleep deprived and I've had those moments. And they can't even come into the same context as the plant medicine and the experience that I had. You know, how do we get the mainstream world to examine the fact that you're pushing past the construct of what we think we understand and that we are truly accessing something outside of just chemical firings and electrical storms that might be taking place in our brain that these drugs are creating, which I think is what most people or a good portion of people believe is really what's going on.
Yeah, well, I would say this is exactly the reason this book was written. So it's a fairly deep going book that really, I think, scientifically demonstrates that the kind of experiences you have there are not produced by your brain in isolation. The starting point then really is to look at all levels of the mind, all possible consciousness of the mind. It's not really that's produced by the brain. These states are downloaded from the cosmos. And that's really also what I think is why it is necessary to bring in not only quantum theory, which is all about different states, alternate states of reality, but also the whole Mayan cosmology, which is based on the idea that the evolution of the cosmos, including of the human beings, is based on you might say macrocosmic quantum states, an evolution through stepwise higher and higher quantum states, and our mind is not a production just of our brains. Rather, our brains is a unit that download cosmic information, and is from that interaction of those cosmic waves that our minds are produced. Unless we had this cosmic contact, which creates different kinds of mind, I would say, then we wouldn't have any mind. Then we wouldn't experience anything. And so once you come to recognize that kind of an origin of the human mind as a download from the cosmos, then you can start to understand that if you take certain kinds of plant medicines like ayahuasca or something like that, it will change the resonance pattern, or it will change the particular way in which the brain receives cosmic information, and then you can understand why is it that we can, by taking these kind of plant medicines, that we can just move into a different world of experience. And it's not, you know, I shouldn't say it's the brain has nothing to do with it. That wouldn't be true. But to say that it's produced in the brain is also completely false. Rather, it is something, or it's an interaction between cosmic waves that the Maya would, in their terminology, talk about plumed serpents. And that's why so many people have serpent visions when they take ayahuasca. Oh,
okay. Oh, holy eye-opener. Thank you for that. See, when I went into this, I jokingly had told the facilitator, I said, you know, she said, do you have any worries or concerns? I said, listen, I'm terrified of death, death and snakes. I don't want to have a bad trip and see a snake. She's like, nope, nobody has bad trips. Trust me on this one. You know, I'm here to facilitate you. The plant medicine will know. And again, this sounds so hippy dippy. The plant medicine will know. And I had serpent encounters, but it was nothing terrifying. As a matter of fact, Dr. Kellerman, it removed that fear. I have a healthy respect of snakes. I don't want to get bitten by one, but yeah. That overwhelming fear of snakes and serpents completely gone.
Wow.
But there is this, it's interesting that you're saying that this is something that is widespread, this same conceptual, that's got to tell us something, that there is something outside of just the brain's interaction of perceptions, because if many people across broad spectrums are having serpent reactions or interactions, that means that we are encountering something beyond ourselves, right?
Yes.
Because multiple people that's something scientifically we can put into perspective, because multiple people are having this exact same experience without knowing that others are having this exact same experience.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So the serpent itself, in your understanding from all this, what can you explain to me about that?
Well, you know, the first thing to notice is that how prevalent the idea of a serpent is as a creator god in many ancient traditions and civilizations. So the aborigines in Australia, they look upon the great creator god is the rainbow serpent. And if you go to Amazonas, which I did and several other people did who want to do the ayahuasca ceremonies there, they have a mythology saying that the great anaconda created the human beings. And if you go to ancient Egypt, you have the cosmic serpents are being portrayed in many different reliefs. And of course, everybody has heard about the story about the serpent in the Bible and its confrontation with the Yahweh. And then the whole idea is much more accessible to us, actually, through studying what the ancient peoples in Mexico and Guatemala were thinking. They devoted their main pyramids to this entity they called the plumed serpent. The you know, the commonly visited tourist site or ancient city of Chichen Itza, in its center it has this pyramid that is dedicated to the plumed serpent. And what used to be the world's largest pyramid in Cholula in Mexico was dedicated to the same entity. So there we have some, there must be a reason for this role of the serpent. And of course, it was used in all kinds of magic and that too. But that's a little bit another level of using it, but it was a significant entity of creation in mythologies or that's, cosmologies all over the world.
That is, again, so powerful a statement, because during one of the revelations I had, my arms, I don't know how to explain it, my arms were folded up over me and my body was convulsing from my feet upward. And the people that were there, the facilitators and the other aides were watching this. I said at one point during this, oh, I realized I was being birthed through the snake. And it was this giant anaconda like deal that I was being pushed out through. And I felt like, and I said, I remember telling her, I get it. This is rebirthing. The snake is nothing to be afraid of. This is a part of the birthing process. Spiritually. And it was just such a mind altering, expansive moment for me. And so many different layers of the snake, and how it plays out through my life and what the power behind it meant. And then for you to say that it's been, you know, considered part of creation. And I completely felt that way. I felt as though it was this birthing moment, this birthing process.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but it's really then, if we try to make it, describe it in modern terms, we could say that it's a wave. And when you think about it, how do you symbolize a sine wave in a world if you have no, you know, computers that can just automatically do it or have trigonometric tables or something like that? Well, the most obvious symbol is actually a serpent or a snake, because when it moves like a sine wave, like a wave. And that's so if we talk about this in modern terms, I would say it's a quantum wave. And those quantum waves that the Maya would explain exactly when they would turn into peaks and when they would turn into valley in the history of the universe and the history of mankind. Those influenced human civilization through the effects that they had on the human mind. Because humans download these waves, whether we like it or not, whether we know it or not, it's fundamental for our entire existence and the kind of reality that we are creating around us. So these waves have largely been ignored and denied by modern science and many others as well. But it's just very, very apparent that to ancient peoples in Mexico and Guatemala, not only the Maya, there are several other peoples in that region who would also honor the plumed serpent, that they saw that as the bringer of life. They saw it as the bringer of civilization. And it's just brought thought patterns to human beings that became crucial for everything that we create and how we perceive reality and so forth. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, the fact that, and you tell very good examples of this, that, but it's just a general studies have shown that the most commonly experienced vision that people have when taking ayahuasca is that of a serpent or many serpents or so forth. They are there, that's really these waves. The only way we can sort of experience or see them is probably then as serpents, as we would do in these kind of altered states.
Could we, if you don't mind now, I mean, this is fascinating. I love this, but I'd like to examine, if we could, the pineal gland. Can you really explain to me and kind of break it down for our audience in an understandable way? What exactly is the pineal gland and what is its importance, not metaphysically, but just for the physical part of our body and brain?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is it's a very small organ. It's about 5 to 8 millimeters long, and it has the shape of a pine cone, and it's located in the center of the brain. And what's special, there are a couple of things that are special about it. One is that it's the only unpaired part of the human brain. Everything else is sort of mirror images on the two hemispheres of the brain. But the pineal gland is unpaired. Another very interesting fact is that it contains calcium crystals. So they're just only in the inner ear that's the only other place where you have crystals in the body, I think, or at least in the brain. So for some reason there, at the center of the brain, there is a little organ, unpaired, that has crystals. And if we go to modern science, it's been shown that this particular gland then plays an important role in the sleep-wake cycle. So what happens is that when the light goes out and the night starts, then this little gland starts to secrete the hormone melatonin. And that's really then what helps us go to sleep. And some people take that as a help to get to sleep. So that's as far as modern science would place it's important, that it regulates the sleep-wake cycle. So if you go to another time zone and then it will adjust your sleep-wake cycle in accordance to when the day and the night begins there. But then the curious thing then is really then that it has played such an important role in ancient mythologies. And
well, can I ask one thing before you go into that?
Yeah.
Obviously, we've been studying the brain for centuries. Has there been any evidence that evolutionary-wise, the pineal gland is shrinking, going away, as we're not seeming to utilize it as much as maybe we did or our ancestors did? Is it becoming less important, like an appendix or a tail or something on humans, or has it always remained the same through history?
Well, you know, nobody would be able to exactly know that. I don't think anyone doubts that it has changed over the no, I don't think anyone claims that it's undergone any change throughout the existence of the human being. What I point out in this book, however, is that evolutionary, in a longer perspective, going back to our you know, to amphibians or reptiles and other people that are forerunners to the human beings, the pineal gland was really like a third eye that was outside of the brain. So it was actually a functioning third eye. But then what has happened over the course of evolution through different kinds of species is that rather than being in the center of the head, rather than being on the top of the head as the third eye used to be in amphibians, it would move to the center of the head in human beings. And there it can't see direct light, in contrast to these amphibians that preceded us. And I think the fact that it's in human beings is exactly in the center of the brain and is an unpaired organ provides an explanation to the role that it has. So the way I look upon it is that it's primarily an anchoring point for the downloading of the mind. So we're coming back to my view that we talked about earlier, that the mind is really something we download. It doesn't come from the brain, but the brain downloads it. But then this mind, it has to be positioned correctly in relation to the brain matter, so to speak. And it does so because that the geometry of the mind that is downloaded, it gets anchored at that central point of the brain, which is then the pineal gland.
Does the I get that. So consciousness exists in your belief outside of who we are, or maybe consciousness is wrong information, wrong way to place that, but the pineal gland is working basically as the router to get the information that's downloaded into the brain. So this consciousness, this information that exists not within us as we think, but it's out there and stored outside of us as well, right? So is it creating a conduit like an ethereal internet?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Now, I'm also curious, of all the research that's been done, has it ever been made public what the brain looks like during these transformative measures when somebody is using plant medicine? Has anybody been wired up to see if the brain sparks, what parts of the brain become more active or perhaps inactive that might explain to us why some of these simulations appear to take place?
Yes, it has. And it's pretty recent work by a group at the Imperial College in London that has studied by this functional imaging technique. They've studied what parts of the brains are active, and they've studied that under the influence of LSD, of psilocybin, and also with the controls, of course. And what they find then is that the number of connections between the different brain compartments are increasing under the influence of psychedelics. So that's a very interesting finding, I would say. So, you know, what that means is that, as I understand it, that you take a psychedelic, and then what happens is that the mind gets that really is what compartmentalizes the brain. The mind our normal default mind, it compartmentalizes our brain. So if we take this substance, it decompartmentalizes the brain. And as that happens, all the connections are being produced between all these different brain parts that normally are separate or working in separation. So that happens, and it takes, you know, as long as there is the effect of the substance you've taken, there is a potential of an integration between the different brain parts that isn't there under normal circumstances.
In engaging the aspects that we do through plant medicines and psychedelics, are there other ways to stimulate that low level electricity, electromagnetic fields, anything else that can stimulate it without without ingesting the chemicals or the plants themselves?
Well, you know, if we look at this. Decompartmentalization of the brain as the goal. If we look at that as opening up the potential to create some integration of our experiences of the cosmos, then you can say, yes, it seems clear that psychedelics have that potential. It can create that change in the human mind and transfer it to another state of mind. But then an interesting aspect of this is that they've studied this kind of brain patterns also in meditators, and they find a fairly similar kind of integration or increased connections between the different kind of brain compartments. So what I'm saying here is then really that taking a substance or plant medicine or psychedelics or whatever difficult word we're going to use to right. describe it, it's just, you know, it's not something entirely distinct from other types of methods that people have to go to some altered or sacred space in their mind. Meditation would be one. There is something called holotropic breath work. What shall I say? Kundalini yoga. I mean, I think there's a whole range of spiritual practices, you might call, that they're not identical. The effects are not identical with the psychedelics experience. And obviously, there is something special with the fact that the psychedelic locks you into a state for a period of time, whether you like it or not, so to speak. Whereas, you know, a meditation, you can just end it or assume. So I would say that all of or a range of different spiritual practices represent a variation of a theme. It's not identical, but yes, I think they're all acting in order to decompartmentalize the brain and create an opening to a more cosmic experience of reality. And one reason I think it's important to point that out is that, you know, the perception has been, and maybe especially so after the 60s and all the wild things people were doing in those days, was that plant medicines or psychedelics was something completely different from, say, meditation or some other spiritual practice people may have. It doesn't look like that. It looks like they're related. These experiences are related. They're not identical, but they're variations of a theme.
I said this on the episode. I wish that everybody could have the experience I had. Not my exact experience, but have that same enlightenment, that same download, because it's virtually impossible in words to convey how different it is than what people's perceptions are.
Yeah.
It's not just being stoned. It's not just, hallucinating. The impact, the power, every aspect of it made you realize just how cohesive everything is and how close we all are. And again, this all sounds hippy dippy, and now I know why, because this is what the hippies have been talking about all along, and they have a reason for it, because if they've been dipping into this realm, I wish I would have found it sooner, because it is life altering. And I could only imagine. I did not have any issues with waves of depression or anxiety after my journey for weeks. Now, that was before we were plunged into our current situation.
Right.
You're not human if you're not dealing with some anxiety and fear at this point. But I can tell that it's not nearly as impactful as it would have been prior to me having that journey, and realizing, that there's something much grander going on. I don't know how all this is going to play out, nor would I ever try to suppose to our listeners that, everything's going to be okay. Everything is as it needs to be, because that sounds very dismissive to the terror that's going on our planet right now. But it certainly gave me a different perspective on the way I am absorbing the information that's coming in, and it is keeping me calmer and more at peace, and not because I feel like I'm above this virus or that my family is above it, but there's just something inside you that changes, and it I would love to do it again, because I'd like more reinforcement of that to put us back in. You talk about the evolutionary changes and these kind of quantum levels.
A second. Can I
please
just go in there? Yeah, I share that experience. I had a couple of psychedelic experiences just in January, where I actually would go through my have an experience of my death, my own death, and I share your experience that you can't just dismiss or ignore the world situation today, but I must say that my particular fear of death has been considerably decreased through having these experiences. And I still don't want to go through the pain of dying, but not the same kind of because you actually are, in my case anyway, you get to see something. You get to see what happens at death, or at least as much as we can believe about that. And that makes it less dangerous somehow. So thank you for bringing that up.
It is. Like my lifelong fear had always been of death, and I came away with a totally different take on it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the calming influence over me at this point. Not that I'm, like you said, not that I'm asking for it. I'm in no rush to get there, nor do I want anybody I know or love to get there. But it's a different sense of acceptance, where before it was completely devastating and damning. I feel very different about that altogether. So it is fascinating. And there, to me, there's, I don't know how to use these words properly, but there is no sense I can relate to somebody to how that is. Just imagine knowing a deep, dark secret and finally you're able to tell somebody, and just that kind of, God, I'm just glad it's out there. I'm glad it's not in me and a part of me anymore. It's out there, part of the universe. That's kind of how I feel now about death. It's no longer this burning ember of fear that's inside of me. It's been released. And that's the only thing I can kind of relate it to. Now, when you were discussing the quantum levels of consciousness, is there anything scientifically measurable that we can show people. See, no, these do exist. I know there's the theory of quantum mechanics and quantum theories exist, but you know, what are the actual principles in place to prove that these theories are more than just theories?
Yeah. Well, what I'm talking about here is the macrocosmic quantum theory. In other words, that the entire cosmos is undergoing shifts between different states of quantum states. In terms of measurable things, as far as I know, there are no techniques to measure those, and there may never be. But on the other hand, you know, I would say that the historical evidence, when you start to match the occurrence in time to these quantum state and how the human civilizations and the human beings were changed at those particular shift points, I think that's it's a very strong evidence. It really explains why people's, you know, relatively suddenly 5,000 years ago went from being simple farmers to building huge pyramids and creating calendars and creating cities. And, you know, suddenly civilization came into existence at the time of one of these quantum states. And I would say that the easiest way of the most immediate way of explaining that is by referring to a cosmic quantum state that changed the minds of people. And so suddenly, you know, this structured, geometrically structured mind came into existence that we're still living with it, but without it, people were in a much more sort of floating state before this. But once you download that structured mind, then the beginning of civilization begins. Basically, it is like as inside, so outside. The change that occurs through downloading one of these quantum states from the cosmic center, that gets to be expressed outside through the creativity of the human beings. I think this book, if anything, it provides too much of evidence that this is really the case. But that evolution really is a product of a stepwise climb of like a pyramid or a pagoda, as ancient people would symbolize this. They would make terrace pyramids. And the reason they built terrace pyramids was that between each of these levels, there is a quantum shift, a quantum leap, if you like. Whether that will ever be possible, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There was a time when people thought it was completely impossible to prove, measure the existence of gravity waves. And now that was proven 4 years ago or something like that, after a very long time of hypothesizing the existence of those based on phenomena that you can observe. In this case, you can connect these quantum shifts that the Mayan people would describe. You can connect it with all kinds of changes in cosmic history. But whether it will be possible to actually measure a cosmic wave, I don't know. It hasn't happened yet.
When we're in these altered states of consciousness and receiving this information in downloads, and you're doing the research for this book and piecing this together with what we know of the past and how the Mayans and other cultures have examined these enlightenments, obviously we've talked about a couple of the commonalities and threads, and I'd like you to maybe go into that a little bit more. But what were some of the changes or things that don't seem to align with different cultures? Is there different aspects regarding belief systems going into an experience like this?
Oh, you mean like researching the different uses in different shamanic cultures of how these kind of medicines were used? Is that
okay, I'm sorry. Let me try to figure out how to formulate this. So Dave Schrader grew up Lutheran in Minnesota, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tim Dennis grew up Catholic in Chicago. You know, Guy Hammernick grew up, Islamic in Rochester, Minnesota. If we all take this drug with our different belief systems, is there a divergent point where some of it is very linear? But then, so you could say, look, we know this commonality thread bleeds between all of these experiences, which shows us that it's much more than just a hallucinatory experience because everyone's having this. That means we must be tapping into this. But then are there aspects where it becomes divergent that because of my pre-believed concepts going one direction, I'm going to have a different deal than maybe my Islamic friend or my Catholic friend or my Jewish friend that would be having the same experience with the same plant medicine?
Yeah, well, as I understand it, one thing that is so noticeable about this using plant medicine is the wide variety of kind of experiences people can have. There are no two same experiences. The possibilities are more or less endless, and they created by the complex interference patterns of waves that we are downloading. And then there is a saying, this is more like a saying in the therapeutic meaning of psychedelics. It's really that you get what you need, not what you want, from this kind of a journey or experience of the other world or an altered state or so forth. And what that means is that maybe to some extent then whatever predispositions you have religiously or so forth, that will guide a little bit what your individual personal experience will turn out to be. I couldn't say anything in general because I would think that, the cosmos will focus on somebody and give her or him what she or he needs, regardless of if it's a Jew, a Muslim, or a Christian. But I would say that, regardless of that kind of a religious predisposition that you have, I think moving into this world and having a direct personal experience of that you have a visionary experience, it will also change your relationship to your religions. You will have your personal, this is what the cosmos told me, you will be able to say, and then you will have to make a choice. Is this really consistent with the religion I'm predisposed by? And then you could say, you have a choice. You could say, no, it's not. I'll choose the religion because that's, whatever. Or you might say, well, maybe I should go by my personal experience and try to see what that meant to teach me. And I don't think that the cosmos groups people here we have the Jews, they should get that that experience. Here we have the Muslims, they should get another experience. Or here we have the Christians, so they should give a special experience. I don't think that's really how it works. I think you're downloading a personal interference pattern of waves that are connecting you to the cosmos, and that will give you, if you taking these substances in a in an appropriate context where it's sacred, or at least it's not just playful or like that, then I think it will give you what you need.
Yeah, I just, like I said, I was just curious along the lines of what are the similarities between experiences and the divergent points. But, you know, I understand it's also subjective. Each person goes into it. You know, I specifically was asked by the facilitator and shaman, what one word did I want to bring to my journey? Mine was forgiveness. And as I was led through that journey, I touched on many different things, but I realized how intertwined love, forgiveness, kindness, all of this were all important in my overall healing. So there was this different aspect, but forgiveness became the prominent aspect of my journey. Now, somebody else who was there had love or health or, you know, different aspects, and they got something else different. So I understand there's going to be those divergent points, but I just didn't know if there's a, you know, you said serpents play a mainstay in many of these experiences.
Yeah.
I just wondered, though, in another culture, would it be maybe the bear is more prevalent or, you know, and I apologize, I can't remember the name of the character, the Hindu character that's like an elephant head with multiple arms. Would that be more of their experience as opposed to the
Ganesh?
Yeah, Ganesh. Would that be more important, you know, be more prevalent as opposed to the serpent?
Oh, I see.
Because of our predisposed belief systems.
Yeah, probably in some extent, you know, because, you know, if you're an Indian, you will know the meaning of Ganesh more than say the meaning of Thor, and if the cosmos wants to give a message to you, it's probably more appropriate to give it through Ganesh than to give it through Thor.
Oh, sure, through a recognizable form. You know, that opens up another concept that I've talked about for many years on the show, is the fact that some of us will experience ghost encounters or angelic encounters. When I had an encounter with my grandfather after his death, to me at face value, it was my grandfather. I went to hug him goodbye, and it was like I grabbed a shaft of vibrating hot air. And I backed away, and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're not used to that." And he said, "Okay, now." And then I hugged him, and I could feel skin and bone and shirt and everything. Yeah. And then afterwards, I started thinking, was that really my grandfather that came to me? Or was it an angelic form that took the form of something that I would listen to, right? If I saw an angel floating there in a white gown and mist, would I just dismiss it most likely afterwards being like, oh my God, I was drunk or high or, well, you know, sleep deprived. That's what that experience was all about. But because it came in the guise of my grandfather and gave me a message, it was more acceptable. So, you know, I wonder if that is part of the aspect of the supernatural, is the way that it it presents itself to us as in the meanings that we would make the most sense of.
Yeah, right. There will never be any certain answer to that, I would say. But, you know, just look upon it as the cosmos giving you your grandfather through an angel. I mean, it was. What's the difference, so to speak? I do in my book. I do elaborate theoretically on the existence of spirits and ghosts and so forth. And basically saying that as living beings, so to speak, we exist in a physical form. But what I'm developing quite in detail is that, you know, we're actually waveforms. There is an underlying waveform to all of our existence, and so when that waveform, which may exist past our physical existence. I mean, this is of course what a lot of religions and spiritual traditions have been saying. The only difference here, really, that I'm making a case through a new theory of biological evolution, and that ultimately there is an underlying wave pattern that underlies the way we are shaped. And once we die, that waveform still may survive in the quantum field, so to speak, and that's what, you know, you may experience and so forth. Of course, your personal emotional experience is the important part of this, but I do want to say that this book does contain a quite rigid scientific explanation as to why these kind of ghosts or spirits or so forth actually exist. They have to exist.
Let's do this. We have to take a quick break. Dr. Carl Kalaman, our guest, when we come back, I'd like to dive into that a little bit deeper. The book, again, is called Quantum Science of Psychedelics, The Pineal Gland, Multidimensional Reality, and Mayan Cosmology. We have a link to that book in today's program, so you can order it. Make sure when you do order it, you rate and review the book so that it gets a higher higher face on Amazon and more people can see it. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Darkness Radio.
You know, I got to laugh. I'm still getting the messages. Tim, are you serious? Is this for real? Are you really, really using feels? Yes, I'm using feels. Yes, I feel better. Yes, I don't have as much pain as I used to have. Yes, yes, it's all real. I can't believe you guys don't believe me. I'm telling you, two eyedroppers a day. I take one in the morning when I wake up because, of course, I got my morning pain. I know you have your morning pain as well. And yes, I take one at night before I go to bed because, let's face it, I want to get rid of that stress and then anxiety, and I want to get to bed and I want to sleep more than just an hour and a half at a time. So yes, I take feels one eyedropper at a time. That's my dosage. And yes, I get the big vial of feels. And I've had a lot of you, and thank God, I've had a lot of you message me and ask me. And I'm glad you do. Tim@darknessradio.com, if you ever have any questions about feels. I'm glad you asked me those questions about feels, because that means you're interested in feels. I know you experience stress. I know you have that anxiety. I know a lot of you experience that chronic pain. You have trouble sleeping at least once a week. I know you're not alone. That's why I do these messages. I know you're in pain. I know you've got stress. I know you've got anxiety. I've told you about my pain. We've gone over it week after week after week. My back, my neck, my knees, my ankles. Everything but the tip of this left pinky I've told you about hurts. Everything. And it's always an 8 to a 10. But I tell you what, with feels, I've decreased that pain. I'm starting to sleep better. The anxiety that I have with chronic pain, you know the anxiety I'm talking about, that feeling that you know you're going to hurt. You know, once you decrease the pain, you start to feel a little better. And you're like, but I know I'm going to feel worse. That anxiety, it's gone. Because I know that I've got a great relief in feels. Now, a lot of you may be saying, what is feels? Well, feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. And feels naturally helps release stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. Feels has helped me with all of that. Relieving the pain, relieving the stress, relieving the anxiety. I'll tell you, throughout this pandemic, a lot of people have been panicking. A lot of people have been feeling that anxiety. A lot of people have been feeling that stress. I'm not as stressed. I'm not feeling that anxious. I'm actually taking things pretty easy. Not that I'm not worried about stuff, because we all are. But I'm feeling pretty good. It's real easy to take. I've told you guys before, this is how you're probably going to want to take it. When you first get feels, you're probably going to want to place a few drops of feels under your tongue and feel the difference within a few minutes. That's all it takes. The thing to remember, though, about CBD is that you're going to want to find your right dose. That's important. And everybody has a different dose. Depends on what your tolerance is. Leave some room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more. You may need to take less. Depends on the effects that you're wanting to get. If you have any questions, Feels is really great about answering those questions, especially if you're new to CBD. Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide you through your personal experience. And the folks at Feels are amazing about being there for you through your CBD experience. You can feel better naturally. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. I know a lot of you there that are in chronic pain have been through this. I kicked Vicodin myself. I know what it's like. You're not going to feel sluggish. You're not going to try and kick anything. CBD is all natural. There's no high. There's no come down. There's no jonesing. There's nothing. It's just a nice, easy relief of your pain. So how do you get into this? Join the Feels community and get Feels delivered to your door every single month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. It's that simple. Although I don't know why you would want to stop the relief of pain. I can't register that in my gut or in my head. I don't know why you'd want to do that. Feels has me feeling my best every single day. It can help you too. You can become a member today by going to feels.com/darkness. And what we're going to do, again, give you 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Once again, this is how you do it. feals.com/darkness. feals.com/darkness. Do it today.
Dr. Carl Kellerman, our guest, again, the book Quantum Science of Psychedelics. When you talk about having a scientific, stringent scientific principles towards things like the supernatural, ghosts, and these, can you describe that a little bit more in depth to us? Because obviously, being a paranormal themed show, many of our listeners are believers and have had their own experiences or are not experiencers yet, but want to have that. What do you believe regarding the soul, the spirit, and life outside of this physical form?
Yeah. Just coming to back to my personal experience with psychedelics is that, you know, you do start, you know, I have experienced just my soul or whatever you want to call it outside of my physical body. And of course, that's already an indication that maybe the soul will not die with the body, so to speak. And we talked about earlier about that. Why would that be? And I think it has to do with how you look upon biological evolution, or if you like, how biological species are created. And I would say that the dominating theory in science today, which is starting a little bit to crumble, but basically that's the materialist, Darwinist idea that, you know, everything is random. All species are coming into existence through random mutations and so forth. And then, of course, in their view, the soul and the mind and so forth are just produced it's just produced by that biological matter that we're made of. Now, I'm presenting in this book another theory of biological evolution, and that is that these waves, these serpents that we talked about earlier, or when I say serpent, I'm just using that metaphor because that's what the ancient people would use. But these waves have created the different kinds of species. And you can track throughout the history of the universe how at peaks in these waves, there is a burst of new kind of species coming into existence. And that's I outline that in the book for anyone who wants to see the detail of this. Now, there are several different waves here and several different plumed serpents, if I go back to the Mayan way of languaging it. But then through the interference pattern between these different waves, you will get different kinds of species emerging. And so, well, what that means is that if the species, the biological species, including ourselves, are products of waves, then that means that ultimately the blueprint for the human being exists in a you could call it a quantum field or an interference pattern of waves, and that blueprint is sort of exists in a non-physical domain, and then you know you can discuss how it takes a physical form. But if there is such a blueprint, as I'm evidencing in this particular book, if there is such a blueprint, well, then you have a blueprint which is a non-physical waveform, but yet you can say that's a living spirit. That blueprint exists. And under certain conditions, including when you take plant medicines or in, you know, you may for other reasons become temporarily in some kind of an altered state, then you will actually have encounters with these blueprints that most people would refer to as spirits. But the point here is that if you want to look upon this scientifically, you know, you have to basically dismiss the whole Darwinist idea that still dominates the world today, which is that we're primarily material, biological matter that has come into existence by accident. I mean, that is the official view of science still today. But that completely changes if you look upon our biological shapes and morphologies and anatomies as being reflections of a blueprint that exists in an invisible quantum field that underlies it. And then once you accept that theory of evolution or of biological species, then it's just to be open to the fact that sometimes in some altered states of consciousness, you will be able to see these blueprints and encounter them. And that could be your grandfather, or it could be it could be an angel, or it could be all kinds of things that, you know, paranormal experiences as they refer to. But once you change the theory of biological evolution, there is nothing paranormal about it. There is nothing supernatural about it. It's just that our physical reality then becomes visible or understandable as a reflection of an underlying quantum field blueprint existing in invisible quantum field.
Wow, that's fascinating. You've got to pick up the book, folks. Get deeper into this. So many of you are fascinated by all the different aspects that we cover on the show. I think this book can certainly enlighten and open up your eyes to new concepts, beliefs, or find ways that the experiences you've already had may make more sense in doing this. Could I ask you, Dr. Kellerman, in your research, what was some of the most eye-opening and astonishing aspects that were revealed to you? I know it's hard, right? You just tell us the biggest concept in the world and make it really simple? No, but
exactly. You know, yeah, right. I should. Okay, so let me just tell you how I write a book. You know, I walk around and do nothing for maybe a year or two, and then something. It's like a book comes to me from the cosmos and tells me you're supposed to write me, and What that means is that apparently I have, through my experiences in these couple of years in between, I have gathered enough of new material that it's time to formulate a new book. And then it's, you know, I don't know. I'm just guided in very often in completely remarkable ways to find what I would call the relevant information for that particular book that wants to be written by me and nobody else, because you're the one that sort of has that unique background. And I should say here, you know, in this case, it is a somewhat unique background, because not only do I have the Mayan cosmology that I devoted certainly 20 years fully to, I also have the chemical pharmacological background that I also devoted 20 years to. And then much more recently, I've had these experiences with plant medicines, then, you know, just from the specific background, particular background, then it just makes sense to try to explain this particular phenomenon, how you get transferred to different worlds when you take a substance, which is really a strange thing before you've done it, really, but it does happen. I don't know exactly what I should say. It becomes a process where you just encounter thing after thing. Just let me mention the finding of the Maya. The ancient Maya, they have inscriptions left behind. And one of the interesting inscriptions is one that describes actually the quantum shift that took place 3115 BCE. And it talked about how some cosmic eight partitioning was transferred onto the Earth, or transposed onto the Earth, and with the direction of the northern or the north. And you know, for somebody who hasn't gone into this or studied how the Mayan waves will connect to human history, that maybe sound very, very strange. What's this eight partitioning happening in the cosmos and going down to the Earth and it with the direction of the north? Well, then you know, it dawned upon me at some point that, you know, the main pyramid in Giza, which was built at that particular time, it's built in eight segments. It's an eight-sided pyramid. It's not four-sided. You might think superficially it's four-sided, but they built it in eight sides, which is much more difficult than four sides to build it in. So it's slightly... it really does describe an eight partitioning. And as archaeologists have found, that particular pyramid is perfectly, astoundingly directed toward the north direction. So then I, you know, made the connection. Well, this is exactly a reflection. This particular pyramid, that's the most important building on the planet, maybe, is exactly a reflection of the quantum shift that the Maya described took place in the cosmos as that particular time. And that really made connections. That made me understand that what's happening on our particular history and the history of everything else is really something that's very much conditioned by these quantum states that we download And once we download them, we start to express them because we feel this is an expression of the cosmic purpose. So we'll have to build a big pyramid if you lived at the time when this was first downloaded. So that's just an example of an important insight that I had.
There's been so much work done around the world with psychedelics and examinations, and certainly here in the United States and abroad. Why are we not hearing more of the profound nature of what they found, do you think? And why is this not realizing the medicinal and psychological help and aspects of what many of these plant medicines can do? Why aren't we examining it more? Is it really just as simple as you can't patent a plant, so it just doesn't matter and they don't want to take it that far? I'd hate to think that it's that rudimentary, but what's your thought?
Oh, I think there are many things involved. I mean, first of all, there has been a tremendous expansion of the kind of research that has been performed, especially in the United States, in very reputable universities. In the past 10 years, and before that, before the 1990s, there was simply a freeze on everything that any kind of research on these kind of substances. So I would say, yes, there is a big expansion has taken place. It's become more acceptable for scientists to do research about it. And, you know, as I communicated about my book here, you know, I contacted Ronald Griffiths, who has done, he's at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, and he's done a lot of research about that. And I found out that he was now the director of a Department of Psychedelics. And that's probably wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. Nobody would have dared to call the department of psychedelics. But that's now happening in one of the more prestigious medical universities in the United States. So it is definitely changing, and it's very much so because of the research that people like him have been doing, showing that this is effective against addiction, against depression, against obsessive compulsive disorders, and possible other ailments where people have just run into running in a rut, so to speak. But then, you know, you may wonder, why was it forbidden in the first case, and it's still illegal in the United States, these substances to use them? Of course, there were. I mean, part of it is that there were excessive craziness happening to some extent in the 60s and 70s and so forth. But there are other reasons from the perspective of a pharmacological perspective. It's not a good business. It's a better business to have somebody take some antidepressant every day throughout their life. That's good business for a pharmacological company. It's not so good business to have some substance that, you know, the person might take when he or she needs it, every year, every couple of months, or I don't know, but not like a daily prescription. So there is that aspect of it. It's not good business, really. I think that's part of it. But then, you know, it might also be that it brings about a change in how human beings look upon their existence and their relationship to other human beings. That that may not be quite consistent with kind of hierarchical social structure that we have today. We may become more aware of how our mind structures are connected to these hierarchical structures of society and so forth. So I think there is also like a political, religious motivation that underlies the ban that still exists regarding them. But things are changing. I don't think there's no question about that.
I'm going to take you way out there for a moment, Dr. Kellerman, if you don't mind. Do you think that if, and maybe animals don't have the same brain system with the pineal gland or whatever, but if animals were given plant medicine this way, the mixtures of plant medicine this way, not just normal ingestion, but this, do you think that they would begin to develop a higher evolutionary thinking process, thought process, and perhaps even a conceptual communication skill?
No, I don't think so. If I just be straight on it, but you know, I remember seeing it one.
Well, that's good. I wanted to make sure that way the Planet of the Apes is not in our future here. That's all right. I wanted to do.
Oh, okay, that's good. No, that would be something. You know, you take that, but I remember seeing these spider webs they had spiders, and they had given the spiders alcohol, LSD, and I can't remember, maybe hashish or something like that. And the spider webs were not as they usually are. They didn't have the normal structure, and the LSD, the spider web, was just out of this world. So, you know, there's some...
Do you think before the spiders took the drugs, were they talking to their friends? They're like, I don't want to have a bad trip, man. You know, I'm afraid of humans. If I take this shot... Right. They're having spiders involved in this. Obviously, you're going to change the cosmology of their brains. So they're going to create new patterns and new things.
Yeah.
But is that just, did you create brain damage? Is that why their structure changed? Was it geometrically less sound? Was it were the patterns less important than the ones that would not be subjected to this?
Well, you know, in my argument, the mind is basically a geometric structure, and temporarily the psychedelic will disengage that normal geometric structure, and that disengagement is what allows for the integration of experiences from the cosmos and so forth. And just from that perspective, it's not at all, if they may also, the spiders, they also may also have a geometry of the mind. It doesn't mean that brain is destroyed, because the psychedelic acts on the interface, the relationship between brain and mind. But it would mean that temporarily, for a certain point of time, they would be lost in space and really wouldn't be able to orient themselves with their normal geometry. And that's what happens to humans too, in my theory, and as I'm presenting it in this book.
Has there been any work or research on the fact of multiple people having journeys at the same time connecting in not just the woo-woo hypothetical, but in legitimately connecting in a communicative way in that ether that we've been able to bring back and examine it all?
I think so, and I'm sorry I can't tell you about it. I don't remember or so forth. I you reminded me. I need to study that. I think there are studies like that. There are studies of or at least anecdotal experiences of people in a group in ayahuasca that for some reason have some common theme taking place. But I wouldn't go in. I don't know enough about it to talk about it. But it's an interesting question. It has been addressed, I'm sure.
What do you want to bring to the listeners and readers of your book around the world with this? What is your overall hopes for this book to bring to them, yeah. I guess?
Yeah, good. Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's very important today especially maybe, to convey that there is actually a cosmic time plan, and that is constituted by a series of different quantum states that we can resonate with. And I think it's very important in dealing with the critical situations to know that, you know, at least there is a purpose, there is a meaningful direction for all of this evolution, and that can be explained by the shifting quantum states that are activated through evolution. That's one thing that I think that's very important. The other thing is that the use of psychedelics, it's not completely different from other types of spiritual practices as we talked about earlier, but it's one of those spiritual practices that allows you to go in the direction of what the cosmic plan outlines for us. It opens up a healing possibility by integrating aspects of ourselves that we have shut down, or things that are influencing us, and it also opens up the whole experience that life here on the planet is just not a material accident. It's really part of a cosmic plan. And you know, as part of that, and I know a lot of other people have done that, you know, it's just to talk about the possible therapeutic benefits that may come out of this use. And it's going in the direction of actually educating therapists today in order to help facilitate, be present with people that are dealing with depressions, dealing with addictions and other kinds of negative conditions that may have. So it's all of these, but it's also integrated. What's really new about this, or unique about this book, is that the whole concept of psychedelics is not looked upon as isolated, not only from other spiritual practices. It's not looked upon as isolated from the cosmic plan. I actually make the case that it's part of the cosmic plan to use that in a responsible way in order to further your own personal development.
I hope that you guys will pick up the book, take a look at it for yourself, and educate yourself. This is so much of what our listeners love and they're fascinated by, and taking it to a different level and examining these things with more of a scientific background, somebody that's not just a hippie shaman out there, but actually has a background in this field and understanding what it is that we're dealing with. You know, when you've got a doctor in physical biology helping to break this down for you a little bit more, so many of you are always asking for that science of these aspects. This book is going to cover that very deep and in depth for you. Dr. Kelman, thank you so much for giving some of your time for us today and hoping or helping us open up our listeners to these concepts and hopefully their own eyes into this evolutionary change.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. It was really very meaningful discussion, I thought.
I did too as well. Thank you so much. Remember, folks, get the book, rate and review it on Amazon. Let the rest of the world know about the book. We'll be back again with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. Remember to check in Tuesdays for the best in true crime talk radio, True Crime Tuesday with Dave and Tim. You've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and diets featuring up to 32 grams of protein. This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.